The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 190.
That's right. It's a Fresh Looks episode. And this episode, we're going to be taking a fresh look at NetHealth, which is Tony's project you're studying at Eastern Michigan University. You're a graduate assistant, and it's your graduate assistant project, right, Tony?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, and he briefly talked to me about it, or at least explained it to me earlier, and I thought it was quite interesting, and we're hoping that you guys find it interesting as well. And one thing to note, Tom, we miss him already. Tom will not be here on this episode. He had a prior commitment. So Tony and That's I will right. be soldiering on.
He went to speak at Mensa.
Yeah, with the smart people.
Right. So this will be a short episode. Again, we're in a time crunch. I've got to get home
soon. Keep your applause to it. Keep your applause quiet.
That's right.
All right.
So NetHealth. So there's a project that my professor's name's Sean Che. And his idea was that the problem with a lot of these internet attacks is it's hard to find the source, you know, to go out and, you know, and find who's causing these attacks and or who's doing the attack.
It's hard to find it because they tend to obfuscate their origin through various mechanisms, through Tor, through various...
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Either through Tor or through just messing with the TCP packets that, you know, okay. saying they're actually coming from somewhere else and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is to try to get some kind of feel of what's happening in the local area of the internets. And report back, right? The idea is, so our project specifically is to find what I deemed or what I coined as the net health or like the network health, of that local internet area. So what we have to do is we have to have a node out there in the internet somewhere, and find out, you know, what's happening local to it. I know I'm being repetitive, but it just trying to
helps the show last longer. Right. That's what I found.
I found a couple things that, you know, that would help us find that info. So one is, you know, Traceroute would give us some of that info, but one of the problems was if we were doing Traceroute, we want to know what's local, the problems are happening. So we want to know, you know, it'd be best to find a node local, you know, in that geographic area that can, that we'd be able to respond to. So to script that out is kind of a hard thing to do. So what we ended up using is speedtest.net. So that also gives us, you know, internet bandwidth speeds and latency. Mm-hmm. And the speedtest.net automatically grabs the local server. So mm-hmm. it's not always hitting one server. It's not, because we want to find out what the internet bit.
Now that's the server that's closest to the, request.
To the request, right. Okay. So what I did is I've created a couple scripts and, it's one script is to, if I have a set of hosts that I can send it to, I just give it, you know, a list of hosts and it copies out, it sends,
Now these are hosts that you've already collected and you've got in a file and it just feeds it in and
exactly.
Okay.
And I'll explain how I found the nodes.
Yeah, that was
the host that we're using. Mm-hmm. I'll explain that in a few minutes. So one script is to deploy this application, or really it's a script, but we call it an application. Mm-hmm. And then the second script is the actual application. In the first half of it, it goes through and does some checks. And, is the scripts in the right place? Is the log folders in the right place? Mm-hmm. And if not, then it creates them. And then
you said this was a bash script.
Yeah, it's a bash script.
Okay.
And then there's a Python script that does the command line version of speedtest.net. Right. And it goes through, or it downloads the Python script, so whatever the latest version of it is, mm-hmm. it downloads it and then is ready to go. And the second half is it actually, it runs the Python script. Mm-hmm. I have it read into three variables, mm-hmm. which is latency, bandwidth, or upload and download.
Okay.
And then takes those three and reports it back to my server. And then I have a database backend, MySQL. It's actually
MariaDB. I was just going to ask. I knew it would be MySQL.
Actually, it's MariaDB.
Or MariaDB.
Yeah.
Which I...
It's binary compatible. Yeah, it uses the same commands. So
actually, some of those MariaDB, when you take a look at it, it says MySQL in there.
Yeah.
So it's pretty funny.
Right. And then it reports it back to my server. Mm-hmm. So I had to find a way that I could script from Bash a way to securely push mm-hmm. data across the internet to my server without having to do a whole lot of back-end work. Without having to set up SSH keys for each individual host to be able to connect into my server and blah, blah, blah. So what I did is I'm using wget to send those three variables to a form. And actually, there's two more. There's a host name, a password, and then the three variables, the three that it pulled from NetHealth. And it posts to a form on my webpage. And that form will read that in. It checks, whether that it's a valid host and password. And then it pushes it into the database. And then good to go.
I always like that. And then you're good to go.
Right.
So often my projects end like that. And I'm good to go.
Right. So the idea is now we have, all the nodes that we're receiving data from and the actual data mm-hmm. they have. And then we're going to map those on a global map, or put them pinpoints on a global map mm-hmm. and then have a little icon with each one, which gives us the change. Like, so if the bandwidth is always the same and, the bandwidth stuff or within.
Do you have a little range or something?
Yeah, I'm going to do averages.
And I was going to say, pick an average.
If it deviates mm-hmm. from the average.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll go like green is, it stays about the same. And then if it spikes in one way or the other, then it will change colors and red or, mm-hmm. or whatever, red, blue, I'm thinking purple or something, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then by a glance, you can see, what's changing. And if it's a whole area, like if there's 10 nodes in one country that are all having the problem, then it's possible something in that area is happening. Mm-hmm. So then you can dig into each of those nodes and see what they're reporting back.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go from there. Then that gives us data, of where to go to. If we're going to start investigating.
And so it's going to generate, or at least it's going to give you, some clues about what's happening there. So what kind, yeah. So what kinds of, things would, might you find there? Might you expect to find there then?
So you could either find out that the internet in that area is having problems, right?
Oh, okay.
Or it would be, if somebody is using too much bandwidth, they're using, mm-hmm. and too much is
kind of relative.
Yeah, it's a relative term. But
it goes back to the average.
If they're being malicious, mm-hmm. right? But if somebody in their area is being malicious and using up, bandwidth that's, attacking somebody else, mm-hmm. then that would give you, a place to start at.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So these nodes, the webpage I have has one page is you can register your own node. And, so the webpage, I haven't talked about it. It's called,
hey, it might help.
Right. It's nethealth.emish.edu.
NetHealth.
Yeah. emich.edu.
Okay, I've typed it in.
And so it brings up a web page.
Mine says server not found. NETHEALTH.
Yes.
.emish.edu.
Should be.
Somebody, Somebody attacked your site and took it down.
It's working for me. Did you type something in line?
I don't know. That's okay, Tony. I mean, see, it says nethealth.emish.edu. Server not found. Try again. Maybe I'm down completely.
Yeah.
Although I've got, I'll pull up a console.
Go ahead. Let me look you over.
All right.
NETHEALTH.
.emish.edu.
Huh. Yeah, I don't
know what's going on.
I don't know either.
Story of my life. All right. So anyway, those of you who are able to get to the site, Tony, why don't you just tell them what excitement and things they'll see?
Right. So it gives a little bit of info about like the homepage, you know, a little splash thing that gives us, you know, a one-liner of what we're about. And then, you know, news items and stuff that are on here. Mm-hmm. And it's all static HTML right now. I just needed something to throw up there to be able to get this going. And there's a register node page where you can go in. And one of the important things with registering nodes mm-hmm. is we need the node name or the host name, the and then the location.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, like, I need latitude, longitude. and I built in a Google Maps picker on there. So if you choose, you can type in your address and search for your address. And then it'll bring up, and it'll give latitude and longitude at the bottom. And then whenever you hit add node, it grabs that info, and then it creates what I call an auth code.
Okay.
And then it reports it back to you. So the host name, auth code, data creation, latitude, longitude is all pushed into the database at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what it uses for whenever you start running the script on your own host.
Okay.
And it reports back. It verifies against it.
Okay.
And
I was just going to say, you know, I think the issue as far as internet access is definitely on my end because I can't get out to anything. I just completed an update and I'm just wondering if I need to reboot something.
Yeah,
so,
probably.
Yeah, that's probably it. So, okay.
Right. So what you're looking at, so if you're going to nethealth.emish.edu right now, what you're looking at is an old version because I'm working on a dev site from a dev site right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got things running and working right now from our, testing development area. It's just, I'm not ready to push it into the main website yet until I know I have some security features put in there.
So you're not attacked.
Right, exactly.
Done in by the people that you're...
right. And then there's a node status page where that you can, if you want to manually type it in, you can go in and you put the node name, or your host name, you know, what you registered with, the auth code that was given to you, and then the bandwidth, you know, update, the upload and the up down and latency.
Okay.
And you hit add status and then it shoves it into the database.
Mm-hmm.
And then the idea is it will then, give us, you know, then you can click on the next link would be to see the map or you can click on to, you know, see your submissions.
Mm-hmm.
And, what we need to do going forward is to have it, you know, I need to build out that map. I was in the middle of mapping it and it just wasn't working for me.
Okay.
But what I need to do is we need to figure out how to run some kind of analytics on it. You know, doing the averages and doing the, you know, what's the change and the deltas. So that's where I need to work with somebody that knows more about it.
You'll just kind of, then you'll end up creating these nice graphic reports or at least some nice graphs and things that show that.
Yep.
Okay.
So the only thing I can think of that would be good to do it at the moment, I'm sure there's better ways to do it, but I can write another script in the back end that would read into from the database.
Okay.
And then it would do those calculations of, you know, the averages and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, and then push that data back into the database.
Okay.
And then from my webpage, then it would just read from those changes. So that it's not the web server itself doing the calculations. It's all done in the back end and in other scripts.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Yeah. And then there's, I didn't think about this until I was running our monitoring system, but after a while, all this data is going to fill up and have a lot. It's going to be a lot in the database.
Yes.
So what we need to do is have data retention policies. So we need to figure out how long we actually need this data, and how can we strip down some of the data that we don't need. You know, or do we need to keep the actual reports, or can we just, you know, over time, can we just keep the changes, the deltas?
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be another script that'll run in the background. Say, you go back, you know, so long, and then start deleting data off. So we don't need, you know, this and that and this and that. And, so that the database won't fill up on
this. It would seem to me that the data most likely to be removed then, is that data that stays within thresholds, you know. And so anything that's an anomaly or that maybe the system's detected a spike outside that range, then that gets held on to. So if you've got to go back and look at it, you can.
Right. And to give you an idea of how much data it's pulling in at the moment, I have 75 nodes in our test environment, and over 3 days.
I went there now. After that update, I rebooted, and I'm good to go.
All right, but over 3 days, I have 45,000, almost 46,000 records already.
Wow!
And so, you know, say, I want to be able to have this scalable out to, you know, 1,000 or 10,000.
Did you put this on Google
devices.
Plus?
No, I haven't yet. No, because I talked to my instructor about doing that and or open sourcing it, and he says he wants to have a working version of it before start doing that.
Oh, I see. Just about registering.
Huh. Right. Yeah, he wants to have a working version before we release it.
I won't put it out there then.
Yeah, but we will or maybe if you. What I'll do is I'll post the link on Google Plus,
and then I'll share it out.
Keep an eye on it.
Oh,
you know, it's not a working version yet, but soon. I would say by the end of May, we should have a working version.
Okay.
And I put it out so far. You know, it's 6 weeks from now because I'm. It's just me, really. I'm the only one working on this right now, and like my professor said, he wants to have it. He doesn't want it public yet, you know, on GitHub or something, until we have a working version.
Sure.
So I'm...
So everyone, do not go to that site.
No, you can go to the site, but like I said, it's not working. I have a dev site that I'm working off of right now.
Okay. I like this part here. The latest happening of NetHealth. Planning is happening. Design is happening.
that's
great.
That's one of the things that I'm like, well, I need something in there, so I'll just a one
liner placeholder
to throw it together, right?
Yeah, a little humor there is kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, when I was spending 4 or 5 hours a week on it, you know, I couldn't spend 4 hours just on one page or just on a set of web pages.
Sure.
Otherwise, it would be 2 weeks before I get back to actually working on the application. So what I'm moving over to now is, or what I want to talk about is these test nodes that we're using. So there's a system out there called Planet Lab, and that's planet-lab.org. I should...
We'll probably post that in the...
And then planet, planet-lab.org. Planet Lab is the... it's a global system that...
that supports the development of new network services. Okay,
that's right.
I read it right off the site.
Yeah. And it's primarily universities that are in the system. You have to be able to apply to have access to it. And then you also have to submit back to it, not submit, but contribute back to the project. And one of the requirements for contributing back is you have to run your own nodes, Planet Lab nodes. And what it does is, it's basically, this is before Docker. They had built the system out. So the current version, it runs on Fedora 8, which is a really old version of Fedora.
Indeed. Did you know, now you may not have gone out to this area, but Planet Lab is actually, is supported in part by the National Science Foundation and also by DARPA. They've got a contract number that is applicable to their, to their involvement.
Nice.
Yeah.
So we have these nodes, and each university has two nodes they have to put in. EMU or EMISH has two of them. University of Michigan has some. Michigan State, Wayne State has them. Ohio State, that's just our, somewhat near to us, has stuff in there.
Okay.
And then I get a slice of the server, and the slice is a what can I think of the word right now? It's not a Docker, not a Docker
container.
But it's a container. So I'm thinking it uses containers, KVM and containers or whatever, something in the back end.
Okay.
To run the system. I wasn't involved in setting up our nodes. But it has something like that where I have full VM to use. So I can get root access. I can install things. I can remove things. So that's what I do with it. I have this script that will go through and install, make sure that, it has Python installed, make sure it has a couple different things. And I can run cron jobs. And what happens is a lot of these got set up. And then not much maintenance is done with them. So the problem I'm having is I go to Planet Lab and say, I need nodes for this. I need as many as you'll give me. So they say, okay, here's 1200 nodes. So I have 1,200 devices that I can use. Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is not all of them is turned on. Oh. There's some reason or another that it's not in boot status.
Okay.
So I need to find out, what ones are booted. So I have, there's another Python script that'll tell me, what ones are booted and shove it into a file for me.
Okay.
And then the problem is that either when my slice was created or something happened, my SSH key wasn't pushed to some of those nodes.
Oh.
So out of the 1200, 600 are booted. Out of the 600, some sort of issue is I cannot connect to it. Either it's down at the moment, maybe they're doing maintenance, maybe they're doing something.
Sure.
Or my SSH key wasn't happening or
playing, they've got whatever. Steam running, don't have enough cycles for you.
Right. And I get, I can't connect. So out of that 600, 160.
Are you telling me you're going to end up with like four?
Right. Pretty close. Well, 160 of them is usable. Oh. So my deploy script.
So just to back up just a little bit, you were handed 1200.
Right.
And you end up with 160. So it's usable. It's about 12%.
Something
like that. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think even less than that.
Yeah, but, probably.
So we were hoping for more. And maybe some of those problems with connecting might have been something with my script. So that's why I've been digging into seeing what's causing these. And it's just a lot to go through to figure out what's causing the problems. But most of them I saw was either, even though it's in boot status, I still can't connect to it. Like I can't ping it or I can't, SSH to it. And whether it's either timed out when I try to SSH into it, or whether my key isn't put in there, or what the problem is.
Yeah.
But, so I have 160 nodes. Out of the 160.
So we're still in a reduction phase.
Exactly.
Okay.
Out of 160, only 75 are reporting back. So that's something that I have control over.
Do you have is there a critical mass? In other words, you know, where if you're doing some kind of statistical sampling, there's sort of a threshold where it's, you'll be what's considered statistically valid. Do you have something similar?
I'm sure we haven't gone that far with that.
Or you're just, okay. Right. Gotcha.
I mean, I'm thinking 10 per a country, or 10 per
an area?
An area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an area is, I don't know, 100 miles square or something.
Okay.
So if I could have one per 10 miles, that'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would give us really granular data.
It would.
But, about, you know, what we're actually getting, you know, and it's global nodes that I'm getting, that I'm connecting to.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go on to the Planet Lab website, there's a little map on there that maps out where all these nodes are at. So I'm not sure, you know, there's a lot in the US.
The nodes they've given you, or they're just the nodes in general?
No, that's just nodes in general.
Okay.
So there's a lot in the US, and there's a lot in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of sporadically throughout the rest of the globe. And it's kind of cool. When I was deploying these apps, I'm watching the host names go by,
mm-hmm.
and I'm connecting to Japan, and I'm connecting to Australia, and I'm connecting to, you know, mm-hmm. places all over the world. And it's kind of cool that I have access to all these nodes.
Yeah,
these
that is
hosts
cool.
out there. But so to be able to map them, I need longitude and latitude.
Sure.
So that's what in my deploy script, I made it so that it will, it'll find I give it a host name.
And then it kind of pings to find out what its lat and long is and send that back to you?
Yeah, except for it's not ping. It's,
that's a bad term to use in this case.
Right, but no, there's a service, there's a website service, and I gotta look up what it is real quick.
Is it that NTAT, or what is it? It's like the time service, maybe?
No, it's not.
Not the time service.
No, it's not a time service.
But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, no, but it's really cool where it'll do, did that hang up? Another connection.
Mm-hmm.
But it grabs the longitude and latitude of an IP address.
Okay.
So I have to first parse out the IP address. So I use dig.
Okay.
To get the IP address. And then I say, you know, go to the service, which is, mm-hmm. it's a wget or a curl.
Okay.
And then mm-hmm. I say, you know, the output of that curl, you know, is the latitude and longitude. And then I put that all into the post, or the wget post to register it. So my deploy script actually registers to the website. And then the website responds back with the auth code. And then I grab that off, and then I shove that into the script, and then copy the script to the node. And then on its first run, it goes through and does these checks, and it has to install, you know, things and grab the Python script and it installs a cron, you know, cron tab and stuff. And one problem I had is cron tab wasn't running. So at first, out of 160, I had like 15. Yeah. I had to find out why it wasn't running. And so there's an extra command I have to push in to get it to work.
Do you get extra credit from your class for that kind of stuff you have to do? All that extra stuff?
No. This is, well, it's GA.
Okay.
Which is graduate assistant. So this is officially, it's mm-hmm. my professor's project. And he gets assistants to help him with it.
He's getting all the credit. You're doing all the work.
Pretty much.
I know how that works.
Yeah. Well, he's doing the paper. He's doing, once we have a working version, he's going to submit for a grant to be able to get money.
Oh.
Once we have money, then we can get more, you know, have like a server farm to run this and to mm-hmm. get more people working on it to get a better version of it running.
Mm-hmm.
But he needs to have basic data.
Sure.
To be able to prove that, you know, this idea does work, you know, have a working concept. A proof of concept.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm working on.
Oh, wow. That sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity to use all the skills that, you know, you've amassed over.
Right.
You
know, yeah. So since I'm not able to, or I'm not allowed to put it on
GitHub. That's why when the podcast is not posted quickly, Tony's been working on this.
Yeah. I have been. Yeah.
So.
Or surgery.
You know, oh, yeah. That's right, too. Yeah, that, too.
Right. No, but because I'm not allowed to put this onto GitHub or something like that yet, mm-hmm. I still need help. Yeah, I need, like I was saying, the back-end scripts for or some way to be able to create analytics and then to display it on a web page. I need help with that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are interested in helping me, email me, tony@smlr.us, and we can connect together. And I do have a place I can share out the files I'm using. And we will, I can share it out to you and we can collaborate and then I'll throw your name on the project list. You know, on one of the pages I have who's, you know, who's about us and who's mm-hmm. helping and, you know, Lua.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, Lua.
Yep.
I contacted him this week and he helped me with some of the bash scripts.
Nice.
He said he's going to try to make it to PangoCon.
Oh, yeah. So yeah. That would be nice to see him.
I told him I'll buy him a lunch when he's there.
Yeah.
And then I also contacted, Mike, Mike Ward from Wayne State.
Okay.
And he said that he'll look at some of my PHP that I hacked together.
Mm-hmm. I know all about hacking together PHP.
Right. I can use some more help. So if anybody is,
and just to make sure I understand, when the help that you're asking for, you've got these big files that has this information in it and you want to kind of parse out and then drop it into or have it kind of parsed out and then placed into some kind of, system or program or something else that will graphically mm-hmm. depict what you've got.
Yeah, well, it all has to be web-based.
Uh-huh.
And, but I need it to go, I need it to be able to connect to the database, read the data off the database, and then either do calculations on it and then report back or to display on the webpage. And, it's things like I want to be able to have a list of the nodes. You click on the node, it'll give us a list of what it reported back. And then it'll give us the analytics on that list. You know, mm-hmm. like what's the average, what's the change and blah, 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 you know, and what's the last 5 minute report? What's the last day? What's the mm-hmm. last month of reports? Mm-hmm. And
where do you plan on that? Where do you foresee those kinds of calculations being done after the data is pulled out of the database? Is that the best place to do that or?
I'm not sure. That's what I was wondering. Whether is it better to do the analytics on the back end in a script and have it just running all the time in the back end? And have it just, shoved into the database, you know, saying with this node, mm-hmm. here is the analytics on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the web page that will display it, well, all it'll have to do is do a query and display.
Well, we know a database guy who might have the answer to that.
Right. So that's my question that I'm really looking for help for is it better to have backend scripts to do that analytics? Or is it better just to have it done on the fly in PHP or Node.js or whatever. You know, I'm not a programmer, so I don't know the best way to do this.
But we know somebody knows, and that's hopefully right. they're listening and can shed some light on it.
Yeah.
And then you'll be part of our feedback section of the show.
Yeah, and I can either.
We promise not to forget about you.
It would be fun to have in the fall or midsummer in the fall, have a feedback session and everybody that helped be able to get on the show with us and we can all talk about it.
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
That would be fun.
Tony, get on that, would you?
All right.
Huh. Well, all right. Well, that's definitely a fresh look at something kind of brand new and cool that you're working on.
Yeah.
So I guess what else we got? Were we going to, you know, we were supposed to unbox this on our last episode, the Google glasses.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, you know what I did while you were talking? I will admit to doing a little bit here. What I did is I successfully paired my Google Cardboard that I installed on my phone to these glasses that have yet to be opened. And now I'm supposed to place my phone into my C1 glass viewer.
All right. Let's open it up and
shall
see.
Shall we do it?
And get that. Yeah.
All right. So those of you who are watching on YouTube, you're going to watch me rip this thing.
Oh.
Well, Tony's hacking a lung out.
I've had a cough for a little over a week, and hopefully it goes away soon. Anyway, so does that work just with your phone? Like the C1, is, mm-hmm. do you have to have a Nexus? Or will it work with other phones?
You know, that's a good question. It's, there's a bunch of safety precautions on the back, but, apparently I found out, everyone, that I will be wearing my phone on my face.
Uh-oh.
Hey, look at the, you know, Google is, they're just so cool. Look at this. It's got a little Google Tech bag that it comes Ooh. In, and then it's knotted, which I'll unknot it. And then I'm going to pull it open here, and then there is this, there are these glasses. I think I have to take my glasses off, which I'll do. And, I'm thinking that, does this thing fit on here,
Yeah, so you have to put the
It says using a different viewer. The C1, this is the C1 glass viewer, yeah. The C1 glass. Place your phone into your C1 glass viewer this way up. So I'm going to do that right now.
And so the C1 viewer is, it's all plastic. It's black plastic.
And yes.
Tony, it has little lenses. Mm-hmm. Has little lenses in it. And
it kind of looks like a stunted set of glasses for somebody who's horribly myopic.
Right. But it's opposite. So instead of having ear tabs going off, that's where you put your phone. And then you're going to end up holding it up like this.
Okay. So and Tony, if you take a look at the screen, now I have my phone. It's very interesting. I have my phone set up. I installed Google Cardboard. And what I'm seeing on my phone right now, I don't have this apparatus in front of my face yet, but my phone has been divided into two parts. I'm holding it horizontally. And so there are two pictures. They're basically the same, a little bit offset, just I think to create that 3D view.
Stereoscopic.
Okay, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So I put this inside like this, and then I look at it like this. Oh, my God. Yeah, it does look like that. Look at the fox. Oh, that's kind of creepy. He's looking at me, and his eyes are blinking. So anyway, I'm in some kind of, it looks like I'm on another planet. I mean, it's very, well, you can tell it's not really high resolution, but it says, look at the fox. All right. I'm just afraid the fox is going to jump at me and I'm going to like freak out. I'm afraid to look at the fox. I just know he's going to jump.
This is making great pictures for my side, by the way.
Oh my gosh. Oh, and you know, it's interesting. Way in the background, there's a lighthouse that, there's a light from it that's kind of going around.
Hmm.
The beacon is, rotating.
Yeah. So this is actually the same thing as Google Cardboard. Mm-hmm. But instead of having a piece of cardboard you're holding to your face, it's actually this, C3, C1.
Yeah, C1, very stylish glasses. And by the way, I got these online.
Do you mind if I try?
I don't mind at all, Tony. I'm going to pass you the device. Anyway, I got them online for, I think, $14.99, something like that. So it's really pretty reasonable.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Tony, I'd take a picture of you, except my phone is in the device. so I can't do that.
Do something.
But anyways.
I'll look down.
Oh, have you? Do you see your feet?
Oh, no.
Where's the fox?
No, it says to hit a button or something.
So, yeah, I don't know what I'm supposed to do next with it. But anyway, so Tony's got him on, and he's now looking at the wall.
That is pretty cool.
It is. It just kind of rotates around. It, you know, it's using that that sensing.
Look at the fox. Yeah, I'm looking. Oh, well.
Yeah.
So it uses the camera to sense what's going on in the background. And then it reports back to the software what angle you're looking at.
Yeah, and I don't think it's using the camera. I think it's just using
From what I was told in the past.
Yeah.
You know, the first version of Google Cardboard used the camera.
Oh, okay.
And that's why just moving your hand in front of it isn't doing anything, because it's actually looking at everything in the background, and everything has to move for it to do it.
Okay.
I don't know what button it's looking that you want to push.
Yeah.
It wants you to push, but.
It's kind of like, I don't want to push this button because it'll turn my camera, it'll turn it off.
Lock the phone, yeah.
Yeah. So.
It might be the down volume button, I wonder.
Yeah, that might be.
Because that's like if you're taking a picture, That's one of the buttons to hit.
Yeah, I'll see if that works. No, it's just turn. I can see that it's increasing the sound.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to press the button and just see what. Well, it's going to turn off. I just know it will. But anyway, yeah, so it's this kind of really craggy, mountainous panorama.
Yeah. Ayers says he thinks it's uses the accelerometer.
Yeah, that's I think, what I call a sensorometer or sense something or other. Yeah, I believe that's exactly what it's doing.
Oh, okay.
But the fox
it has to be able to, like, granularly see whether you're going up and down or right and left. Does accelerometer have 3D you know? I don't know.
Yeah, it is. You know, every time I'm focused on the fox's face, there's this little indicator up here that you know. Maybe I the only button I have. I'm gonna try this and see what happens here. Oh, it turned it off. Oh, that was kind of ugly. Yep. Mm. So, anyway, we're going to do some more investigating, and I'll report back.
Yeah, and hopefully mine will come in by that time.
Yeah.
I was going to order it on air, but we don't have time right now to do it.
Yeah.
But we will. I'll hopefully have a set, and Mary will have hers, and if you come see us at PenguinCon, then we'll have them available, and we can play around with them. Mm-hmm. What we need to do is look up other Google Cardboard pictures and stuff to use. Because I've seen, you know, the one I saw at Ohio Linux Fest they were using was an actual landscape that, like, you're walking around in a field. So it'd be fun to go into, like, an empty field house or a gym or something and walk around in the field and be able to see everything. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, that would be. And one of the, these glasses seem to have dual purpose, because if you turn the way they're set up for the use, you know, as a 3D viewer, is that the phone front is facing the lenses, but if you turn it the other way, it'll prop it up and you can watch movies.
Oh, yeah. It's a stand, too.
Yeah, it's like a stand. All right, well, there we have it. So, we had fresh looks on Tony's NetHealth project, and then we had the unboxing of the C1 Glass, the immersive VR experience for everyone from Google Tech, that is.
Yeah.
This is such a lovely bag.
That's pretty cool. All right. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 190.
Yeah, fresh looks. And you just heard what those fresh looks were.
That's right. And this is Tony Bemis.
And Mary Tomich.
See you at PenguinCon.
Yeah, that's right. Next broadcast will be from PenguinCon.
Yep. We'll be broadcasting live at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. It might actually be 8:30 by the time we get everything set up. But... so you can, if you're at PenguinCon, come see us.
Yes.
Like I said, the suite is actually in a hotel. And it's a hotel room.
Yeah, we won't be
I don't know the room number yet.
Meeting room like we were before.
So if you want to come and see us, but you don't want to pay admission for PenguinCon, you can still come and see us.
Yeah.
That you don't have to have a PenguinCon badge or a con badge to be able to get in to see us. And just look, like, usually they posted by the elevators, you know, different room parties. Look for one that says Podcast Detroit, and that's the room we'll be in.
Cool. I'll look for it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone.
Yep. And here we go.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Gay Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduk to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at LinuxLuddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
The Linux Link Tech Show, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast. On the web, www.tllts.org. By email, techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC channel, thelinuxlink.net, port 6667/techshow. And Flying Rich is so hot.